Spanning over 663,000 square miles, Alaska is a land of breathtaking beauty and unfathomable secrets. Its vast forests, rugged mountains, and remote valleys remain largely untouched by man, a wild frontier where the unimaginable roams free. But beneath the awe-inspiring landscapes lies a realm of mysteries that defy explanation and challenge our understanding of the world. In Alaska, where the wilderness stretches beyond the horizon, countless stories have emerged. Tales of towering figures that stalk the edge of darkness. From the elusive Sasquatch to the menacing Dogman and Wendigo, these are not mere legends, but whispers of something truly otherworldly. But perhaps more chilling than the sightings of these cryptids are the stories left untold. With over 1,000 missing persons cases remaining unsolved, Alaska has one of the highest per capita rates of disappearances in the United States. What secrets lie hidden in the vast, unexplored wilderness? How many have ventured into the unknown, never to return, their fates intertwined with the very mysteries we seek to unravel? Join us as we dive into firsthand accounts of encounters that defy explanation. Tales from the edge of reality itself, from the shadows of the Alaskan wilds to the darkest corners of fear and fascination. We bring you stories of the unseen and the unheard. My brother has always been the adventurous type. Growing up, he was the one who'd lead us through the woods behind our house, making up stories about the creatures that lived there. He had this way of turning every little outing into an adventure. I remember how he'd talk about joining the military like it was just another adventure waiting for him. And when he finally did, it was like he found where he was supposed to be. Alaska, with its endless wilderness, was like the ultimate playground for him. He thrived in that environment, soaking up the rugged beauty. It was more than just a posting for him. It was a challenge, a chance to prove himself against the elements. Before the night in question, he'd tell me stories about the Northern Lights, the wildlife, and the raw, untouched landscape. It was clear he loved it there, despite the harsh conditions. But after his encounter, his stories took on a different tone. This whole thing originally went down around Christmas time, which, up there, means it's not just cold. It's that kind of cold where the air bites at you, and the snow just doesn't stop coming down. He and a few buddies had gone out, visiting friends, just trying to make the most of their time off. They were driving back to town, late at night, on one of those back roads that feels like they're miles from anywhere. There's three other people in the car with him, just laughing and talking about the night. But as they come around this bend, the headlights catch something by the side of the road, and not just anything expected, something surprising and something big. They all see it as they're passing by. This figure, I guess you could call it, hunched over by the trees right next to the road, close, like 20 feet away close, just watching them as they go by. And just like that, the laughter stops. Everyone's silent. I mean, what do you even say when something like that happens? After they pass it, things are quiet for a bit, until one of the passengers, she asks my brother if he can turn around. She wants another look at whatever that was. There is a lot of talk in the car as to whether or not that was a good idea. One of the guys was adamant that they do not go back, but my brother and the other two people were interested in checking it out. So, with the 3-1 vote, my brother does a U-turn, and they head back to where they saw this thing. I guess curiosity got the better of them. As they get closer this time, someone shines a flashlight towards where this thing was standing, and that's when the screaming starts. Because there, in the beam of the flashlight, they see these red glowing eyes staring back at them. Can you imagine? Red eyes just cutting through the darkness, looking right at you. That's when everyone else in the car starts screaming too. And hearing it described in detail through my brother's eyes made it seem all the more real and terrifying. Standing tall, he said that the creature's height could easily surpass 8 feet, dwarfing any human in comparison. Its body was covered in thick, matted fur, dark brown to black in color, which seemed to absorb the headlights rather than reflect it. The fur was long and unkempt, suggesting a life spent in the harsh wilderness, battling the elements. He also said that the most striking feature were its eyes. When caught in the flashlight's beam, They glowed this ominous red, like coals smoldering in the dark. He knew that they weren't the passive eyes of a curious animal. He said they held an intelligence as they stared at the car. The face was partially obscured by the shadows and its own fur, but my brother recalled a broad, flat nose and a wide mouth that was more human-like than he would have ever expected. Its arms hung low, nearly reaching its knees, suggesting immense strength, and its hands appeared large with fingers that were tipped with what he could only assume to be sharp nails, hidden in the darkness. Despite its size, it seemed perfectly at ease in the wooded environment, moving with a surprising grace. Now, here's where it gets even crazier. Right as they are taking this all in, the car stalls, or stops running, or something. My brother can't remember exactly. He was so freaked out. But there they are, stranded in the middle of nowhere, with this huge, unknown thing just outside. And my brother, he's just acting on instinct at this point, trying to get the car started again without wasting a second. Somehow, he gets the car running again, and the moment it starts, everything inside goes quiet. They just want to get out of there, fast. They're all looking out the windows, trying to see if this creature had moved or if it was still there. But all they see is snow and trees. Nothing else. My brother drove like a madman back into town that night. He didn't want to risk breaking down again, not after that. When they got back to his place, that's all they could talk about. What was it? How scared they were. Now, I don't know if any of them went back later to look for tracks or anything, but I do know my brother never brought it up again. Not until he told me. And it's strange, isn't it? How something like that can happen, and it's like the world just keeps on turning, oblivious. My brother? He always kind of believed in Bigfoot even before this, but after that night, he was convinced, more than convinced. And telling me about it, I could hear it in his voice. This wasn't just some story. For him, it was real. It was something he couldn't explain, something that stayed with him. And honestly, hearing him talk about it, how can you not wonder? How can you not think maybe, just maybe, there's more out there than we know? I have been following your channel for several months now and appreciate the work you do. I've read a few accounts that were similar to mine, so I decided to send you an email in hopes of gaining some insight into what happened to me and my family. This encounter happened while we were on vacation in 2007 in Alaska. We drove up from Anchorage, where we were living at the time, to Denali National Park with our two young daughters, who were both under the age of 5 at the time. This distance is only about 200 miles, but the drive took us 6 hours because of our frequent stops with the girls. We had booked a small cabin just outside the park entrance and planned on staying for a week if all things went well. But you know how it can be traveling with small children, and so we weren't convinced we would make it the full week. On one of those days, we decided to just take a drive through part of the park. The road into Denali National Park heads west towards Kantishna. There are several pullouts and overlooks along this stretch, where people can stop and view wildlife or take photos. The road is pretty rural and you can't travel very fast along it, which is fine when you're there for the views and need to stop frequently with kids. So, we had stopped at one of these turnouts because there was a herd of caribou crossing the road further ahead. The turnout was empty other than us, and the girls were excited to watch the herd. Thank goodness for their excitement because, as is the case in the wild, time stands still until the animals do their thing. So, we just relaxed and walked and looked around. As we waited, I noticed movement out in front, between two large rocks that bordered this particular turnout. As I looked closer, what appeared to be something strange seemed to emerge from behind one rock and then disappear behind another adjacent rock nearby. It was fast, and I almost wasn't sure I had seen anything, so I kept watching the spot for more movement. It really caught my attention because it almost seemed like someone was playing around. I especially thought this when I would see it pop back out momentarily and then duck back down. It wasn't long before I pointed it out to my wife, and she started watching for it too. We started looking intently towards those rocks, trying to figure out what exactly was going on. Then all hell broke loose. We watched, as suddenly we saw this figure. It was large, easily over 6 feet tall, emerge fully from behind one of the rocks. The figure stood upright and had this thick, dark fur all over. It wasn't a bear, that much we could tell. It looked around, seemingly as surprised to see us as we were to see it. My wife squeezed my hand hard. She was obviously terrified, and so was I. But the creature, whatever it was, didn't seem interested in us. It looked our way once, and then began walking parallel to the road, not towards us, but away, like it could care less about us. We were both frozen, watching it move with an odd grace that seemed impossible for something of its size. Then, one of our daughters, the youngest, she must have felt the tension because she started to whimper. That sound, soft as it was, seemed to carry in the stillness of the Alaskan wilderness, and with that, the figure stopped. It then turned its head towards us, and I felt this chill go down my spine. There was something about the way it just stood there, looking at us, that felt, I don't know, almost human. My wife's protective mother instinct kicked in and whispered that we should get back in the car immediately. I nodded, and we started to herd the girls back, trying to keep it cool so as not to scare them, since they had no idea what was going on. But kids pick up on these things. They knew something wasn't quite right. We got back in the car, and I turned it on, ready to leave in a hurry if we needed to, which would have been back the way we came. But the figure, it just turned away from us and continued on its path. We watched it until it disappeared into the trees. After it was gone, we sat there for a while in silence. The caribou had moved on now too, and it was like the whole encounter had been some sort of weird dream. But it wasn't a dream. We knew that. My wife and I whispered about it as we drove off, trying to make sense of what we'd seen. In the end, we never did find out what it was that we saw that day. We stayed the rest of the week, but we didn't see the figure again. We went on hikes, had campfires, and enjoyed the rest of our vacation. But there was always this unspoken thing hanging over us. When we got back to Anchorage, life moved on. We told the story to a few friends. Some believed us. Others had a good laugh. Years have passed, and our daughters are now teenagers. They don't remember much about that trip, just stories we've told them. But my wife and I, we remember all of it, every detail. Every now and then, we pull out the photo albums and look at those pictures from Denali, and we wonder. We wonder about the vast wilderness and all the secrets it keeps. We wonder about that day, that figure, and what it was doing out there. And honestly, we wonder if we'll ever go back to find out more, but it doesn't look like that is going to happen anytime soon. Hey there, I've got a tale for you. You might find it a bit out there, but stick with me. It's about this one time I ran into something downright bizarre. I'm Richard, by the way. I'm from a spot in southern Louisiana, Lake Charles to be exact. It's way west of New Orleans, close enough to Texas, that you could drive there in less than an hour. So, I've been tuning into your channel for a good while, always kicking back to listen to the wild stories folks have about cryptids and the like. It's kind of my thing. Been fascinated since I was a kid. And when I caught wind that you were looking for personal accounts, I figured it's time I threw my hat in the ring. This particular incident went down at this tiny lake just outside Lake Charles. I was out there fishing, and it was one of those evenings where the sun was just dipping out of sight right quick. Now, I don't know if the timing had anything to do with what I saw, but let me lay it out for you. We were packing up, my buddy and I, leaving our spot by the water. He got into his truck and took off before me. He heads out a different way since his place is in a totally different direction. No sooner had he left than something strange grabbed my attention. There's this little island nearby, nothing but tall grass, and something was moving out there. It looked like a person, all hunched over like they were searching for something they dropped. Then, in a blink, they snapped upright. It was weird the way it moved, all mechanical-like. So, I'm standing there squinting at this thing, about 100 yards off, and it whips around to face me, freaky fast. What got me was how it spun without moving its feet, which I almost didn't share that part, but I swear it moved without moving, if that makes sense. So now this thing was standing upright, and it had to be around 6 feet tall, maybe more. Its skin was this murky green color, like pond scum, and had a texture to it that reminded me of alligator hide, rough and ridged. The eyes, they were large and bulbous, a deep yellow color with slits for black pupils. They caught the light in a way that made them seem like they were glowing. Its head was elongated, kind of like you'd picture a dinosaur's, with these bony ridges going down its back. The arms were long, too long for its body, and they ended in these clawed hands that looked like they could rip through metal. The torso was thick and muscular, like a bodybuilder's, but it was the movements that were the most disturbing. They were too precise, too deliberate, not at all like a person or an animal, like a mix of things, like some weird hybrid creature. And then the wings. They weren't feathery, but more like bat wings, all leathery and veined, stretching out wide from its back. They had to be twice as wide as it was tall. Easy. When it unfurled them, it was like watching a curtain being pulled back, revealing something you wish you could unsee. It didn't make a sound, not that I heard over my own heart hammering in my ears, but the way it moved toward me, it was fast, but it wasn't running, not like a person. It was more of a lunge, using its wings for balance, or maybe to make itself look even bigger, more intimidating. The legs, I almost forgot, they were thick and ended in what looked like three-toed feet, but with talons, like a bird of prey. Except this bird was straight from some prehistoric era. When it jumped, that's when I knew this wasn't just something I should recognize. No human moves like that. It was like gravity didn't apply to it the same way. It leaped into the air, wings spread, and took off with this strange gliding motion. It wasn't graceful, but it was effective. I didn't freeze up, thank goodness. I bolted to my car, cranked it up, and floored it. That thing? It launched into the air, wings outspread, like some giant bird. But something about it was off. It didn't fly right, especially after that whole body-twisting stunt. I didn't dare look back until I hit pavement, which was about a mile down the road. My mind was all tied up in knots. Later, my buddy calls up and has a strange sound to his voice. I thought he was calling to say he got home okay, but end up that he saw something too in his rearview mirror. Thought it was an owl at first, crossing the road right after he left. But of course, the size didn't match an owl, and he just kept on driving. Once he got home, he got to thinking that he wanted to be sure I got out of there. I asked if he noticed anything else, but he said no. He just had a quick glimpse of it. So I told him what all went down and what all I saw. Needless to say, we don't fish that area anymore. Doesn't matter how good we think the fish might be biting. We have other friends who go there and talk big about it, but we don't go. Anyway, this whole mess happened years back. I've been scouring your channel since last year, looking for anything similar. Nothing yet, but I'm glad to get this off my chest. Thanks for letting me share. Keep your eyes peeled if you're ever out by Lake Charles, especially when the light's getting low. You never know what you might see, and if you do see it, please let me know. Before I get into the meat of this story, I feel it is necessary to provide some context. I need to bring you into the orbit of the world I used to live in. The year was 2015, a time when life for me was just about solitude and the tranquility of the wilderness. I was a man living on the fringe. I was a bit reclusive, you might say. I was choosing the company of nature over the hustle and bustle of human existence. But on one fateful night in late September, the tranquility of my world was shattered, and it hasn't been the same since. The place I called home was not your typical suburban house or modern city apartment. No, my home was a rustic cabin that lay deep within the heart of the Florida Everglades. I was far removed from the noise and distractions of civilization. The cabin itself was nothing grand. But to me, it was a fortress of solitude, a retreat where I could get lost listening to the wind and the sounds of nature. The Everglades is a unique region of wilderness. It is a sprawling landscape in southern Florida filled with lush greenery, murky waters, and rich biodiversity. This marshy wonderland stretches as far as the eye can see, with towering cypress trees standing as ancient guardians over the swamp. The swamp was an integral part of my life. It was my backyard, my fishing pond, my slice of wild heaven. Nearby, the meandering waterways teemed with an array of wildlife. Alligators basked in the sun, herons hunted in the shallows, and the occasional deer would stop by for a drink. As an individual who appreciated the wonders of Mother Nature, this vibrant ecosystem was my source of constant fascination and tranquility. Yet this seemingly idyllic paradise turned into a hunting ground on that bone-chilling night in September. Just as midnight was closing in, the cacophony of the swamp fell eerily silent. The crickets stopped chirping and the frogs ceased their croaking. At the time, I was sitting out on my porch enjoying the night when I noticed a peculiar movement in the water. It was an odd disturbance that was out of sync with the usual rhythm of the swamp. I pushed myself up from the worn-out wooden rocking chair on my porch and squinted into the moonlit marsh. All the while, my heart was pounding with a rhythm of unease. A peculiar disturbance caught my attention. Something was disrupting the water's natural flow and creating ripples that seemed alien to the rhythm of the swamp. I knew something wasn't right, and that was more chilling to me than the night air. Emerging from the murky depths, I watched as a figure began to take shape, solidifying my fears into a tangible reality. It was a hulking figure. The silhouette was monstrous and towering in the moonlight. It had to be at least 8 feet tall, the height itself invoking fear. This was not a creature that belonged in the Florida Everglades. It didn't belong anywhere on Earth for that matter. Its eyes were what caught my attention next. They were an ugly yellow, the color of decay and disease. They pierced the gloom like a pair of glowing embers. They radiated an intense evil light. The glare was hypnotic and captivating, yet filled with an intensity that made my blood run cold. As my gaze descended from its eyes, I took in its entire face. A face that could have been ripped straight from a horror film. It was reptilian, bearing an uncanny resemblance to an alligator or a crocodile. But what was most disturbing was not the inhumanity of it, but the fact that this monster, this grotesque mimicry of nature's design, stood upright, balancing itself on two legs. The creature moved awkwardly, yet it moved with a purpose. It was heading towards me, and its heavy footfalls were squelching in the swampy mud, sending shivers down my spine. I could hardly breathe as I stood there. My body was frozen in a mix of fear and disbelief. Here, on my humble porch in the heart of the Everglades, I was face to face with a monster, a nightmare brought to life. It was a terrifying moment where my sanctuary turned into a scene from a horror movie. The sight was absolutely horrifying. Luckily, my feet worked and I jumped inside my cabin, securing every window and door from the inside. I even pushed every piece of furniture I had against the doors with the hopes of keeping the thing out. I spent the night huddled in a corner, listening to the creature scratch against the wood, its guttural growls resonating through the rooms. As dawn broke, the chilling sounds receded and I was left in the silence of my home. I couldn't help but feel that my sanctuary had been violated. The days following the encounter were a blur. I left my beloved home and returned to civilization in a way that I never thought I would. I moved in with my sister for a while and spent many months there before being able to return. Needless to say, life has never been the same since that encounter. The wilderness that once brought me peace has become a source of unending terror, for I know what lurks within the depths of the Everglades. It's an abomination of nature, a creature of nightmares, and it's forever etched into my memory. There's a ritual in the national park where I work. Until recently, I didn't quite understand it. It felt like some sort of hazing, like a prank reserved for the newest ranger. Our park is vast. It's the kind you have to dedicate a whole weekend to if you really want a taste of what the woods have to offer. There's more beauty out here than you could possibly see in a single day. I guess there's ugly out here too. When I first started, I was put on the night shift. The other guy seemed to be eager to leave that post behind. I figured it was because of the weird hours. That wasn't exactly the case. I'd start my nights by punching in and setting up shop in a small security office. My job, for the most part, was watching cameras, cleaning up after the day's visitors, and evaluating any projects that might need to take place the following day. Plus, of course, the ritual. When they told me about the chicken, I thought it was a joke. Then I showed up for my first shift, and sure enough, there was a whole skinned chicken waiting on my desk. Wrapped in plastic, dropped off by a member of the day crew. They told me I'd need to walk it into the woods, following a specific trail before unwrapping it and slapping the meat down on an old tree stump. Then I'd go back to work as usual. The first night, I laughed and did as I was told. I wasn't going to let their little hazing practice get under my skin. I played along, hardly concerned with my duties or my surroundings. Then the chicken was there on the second night. But the joke was over, I thought. Just seeing another whole chicken on my desk made me groan. I was agitated. How long were they going to keep at it? I took it out the second night, too. This time, I was too frustrated to shrug off the world around me. Following the marked trail, I realized something. The woods were different at night. I'd conducted all of my interviews and undergone my training during daylight hours. Out there, when the sun was down, the forest was strangely quiet. When the wind blew and the leaves rattled, it sounded more like a rumbling stomach than a whistling brush. The sound made my skin crawl. So I dropped the chicken on the stump, and that night I ran back. Night three was when I made my mistake. I didn't want to go out in those woods again, not with enough raw meat in my hands to make me feel like bait. I tossed the offering in the dumpster instead. The rest of the crew wouldn't know one way or another, would they? Not until I was long gone for the day. They could chew me out for skipping their little ritual all they wanted. But it wasn't the park rangers who came looking for me. It was something else. I saw it on the cameras first. It looked like a dog ran past the parking lot feed. I stared at the camera a while after the blurry shape disappeared, but the dog didn't come back. I heard a scurrying outside the security booth and locked the door to the outside. It was a raccoon or an opossum. I was sure, but a chill was creeping up my neck anyways. I focused on the cameras. Then the dog returned. It was at the dumpster sniffing around the edge. It must have come looking for its offering. Only no normal dog could have understood that concept, right? A normal dog would have stuck around the tree stump, waiting for its master to add food to its bowl. It wouldn't have come looking not like this. Then again, it wasn't a normal dog on the cameras. It was a huge one. It was twice the size of any mastiff I'd ever seen. If it hadn't been walking on all fours, pointing with its muzzle to sniff out its meal, I would have thought I was looking at something else entirely. I would have called it a bear or a lion of some kind. But its head was strictly canine. And even if its patchy physique reminded me of a man's in some locations, I couldn't imagine it was anything but a hound. A massive, disfigured hound of some kind. Its gnarled back and man-like shoulders had to be a defect, right? In those ways, it was enough unlike a dog to make me doubt. It was enough to push that chill further throughout my body. When the beast turned from the dumpster, I felt an icy grip on my heart. It felt like I was watching a monster crawl out from beneath the bed. It was stalking its way toward the security booth, apparently dissatisfied with the thought of huffing the scent of chicken all night. It wanted something more. I knew it. It wanted to find a bigger meal since the easy one was no longer on the table. I waited and braced myself for the creature to come knocking, slamming, or scratching against the door. When it never did, I sighed. I sat wrapped in my dread until the sun came up, and the next park ranger arrived to relieve me of my duty. When he saw my face, he only shook his head. He already knew, I suppose, that I'd failed to place the chicken where it belonged. He patted my shoulder and said to take the next night off, that the former night ranger would be resuming his duties. I did as I was told. After a cautious phone call, I was moved to work the daylight hours. I never did go back after dark, but the ritual still asks for my help at times. once or twice a month at the end of my shift. It's me. I'm now sometimes dropping a chicken off at the night ranger's desk. Not a lot of people from outside of Montana know about the beauty of Flathead Lake. Unless you're really invested in the world of fishing, there isn't much reason to learn about our little body of water. I shouldn't say little, I guess. Flathead Lake is massive. Almost 200 square miles, if I remember right. You can check out that stat. I know I'm not too far off. You can check any part of this story, actually. I'd love to be proven wrong. I'd love to know what happened on the surface of Flathead Lake. I'd settle for anything other than what I believe right now. I was out kayaking and planning to go from one side to the other. And that's not something I recommend doing alone if it's your first time. As for me, I'd been kayaking plenty of times. But I'd never challenged myself with something as great as the 25-mile length of Flathead. I'd been to the lake plenty of times too. Hiking the perimeter, fishing from the bank, and skimming the surface in a kayak or canoe. It was a favorite date spot of mine, actually. Everyone loves a little time on the water, especially at sunset. I don't think I'll be taking anyone back to Flathead anytime soon, though. That sunset view is important. I forgot about that. I timed my day so that the last stretch of my journey would happen right at dusk. I wanted to relax at the finish line and watch the sky change colors. Then I'd pack up and head home. A friend of mine would be waiting with a trailer to tow my kayak. I didn't make it there on time. As the day started to wind down, the surface of the lake got more and more empty. Tourists were going home. Fishermen were going to grab a bite to eat before returning to catch what they could under the cover of darkness. That was maybe the first time I was actually alone on Flathead. It's at least the first time I remember. Maybe that's because of what happened next. I was maybe 3/4 through my route when I saw something sticking out of the water. It looked like tree branches, long and wiry, rising out of the surface. Now, plant life can come loose in the lake at any time. Trees can fall and be washed into the water, only to turn up later, more buoyant and rotten. Something about this was different, though. The way the branches broke the surface and split into multiple limbs. It reminded me of an elk's antlers. My dad used to keep a set hanging above the fireplace. That itch of nostalgia convinced me to go investigate. I knew the horns or branches or whatever they were weren't naturally occurring in that spot. I expected to run into a log, push it aside, and return to my night on Flathead. The branches didn't budge, not at first. They certainly were buoyant or floating, and they definitely didn't show any signs of being strips of rotted wood. They were covered in something smooth and damp. It reminded me of a fish's skin. Small scales so tightly grouped that they feel like one smooth surface. It was all wrong, all of it. That sense of touch had me so confused that I convinced myself that this mystery was mine to solve. I grabbed the branches with both hands and tried to shake them. Then something moved under the water. There was a ripple on the surface that rocked my kayak. The branches turned as if there were eyes attached to each stalk that wanted to look my way. They rose a bit, maybe 3 inches out of the water. Maybe I had knocked it loose, I thought. So I leaned over the edge to get a better look. The shape under the surface wasn't a tree. It was a fish, I think. It looked like one. I had cast my line enough times to identify the things that lived in Flathead. This one looked like sturgeon. A massive, frightening sturgeon. 20 feet long, I mean. Long enough to shake any man. I could see its head. I could see the massive antlers running all the way back to its skull. If I could have jumped from my kayak to the shore, I'm sure I would have. I yelled. I flailed. I almost capsized, I think. The fish jerked away from my kayak and darted back down. The antlers disappeared from above the surface, knocking against the edge of my boat as they disappeared. I got out of there as quickly as I could. I told my friend, who insisted we call the Office of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. They dismissed me immediately. I tried to go federal. The National Park Service came to speak to me, but spent the entire conversation asking if I had been drinking on the boat that day. I showed them the scratches on my kayak from where the antlers scuffed the edge. They told me not to call again. They said if I did, that I'd be arrested. Do they have the authority to do that? What crime would I be guilty of exactly? It didn't make sense to me then, and it doesn't now, but what am I supposed to do? I asked around after that. I talked to some locals. I'm not the only one who's seen something on that lake. Apparently, weird sightings go back for hundreds of years. Could the fish I saw have been that old? I didn't think something like that was possible, but I felt it in my own hands. I touched it, you know? I can't pretend that didn't happen. It's all I talk about now. My friends, even the one who was there that day, have started to look at me with fatigue and concern. I'm that guy. I'm the guy at the bar telling a story that you don't believe. After all, you don't believe me now, do you? In 2003, Ted and his 19-year-old son had a very bizarre experience that they couldn't quite explain. The morning started like any other on a beautiful April day in Pennsylvania. Ted and his son set off around the Blue Mountain Lakes area, hoping to spend the day together fishing. One thing that Ted noticed immediately upon getting out of the car was a strange odor in the air. It was stinky, reminding him of a cross between a carcass and a rotten egg. However, the sky was clear with no indication of incoming bad weather. They spent the morning there but didn't catch much. They both thought that maybe it was because they had not brought their lucky fishing rods. Throughout the time they fished, they couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. Ted's son, whose name Ted never revealed, admitted that he had been uncomfortable the entire time too. Often Ted would hear a loud ringing noise coming from the distance that seemed to almost infiltrate his eardrum and brain. He also noted that the area was generally a popular fishing spot and was shocked to see barely anyone else around. Yet at first, he didn't connect this to any of the events that occurred that day. After a few more hours, they decided to pack up and head home. As Ted started the car, he noticed that it was running extremely rough, like something was wrong with the engine. There were no warning lights on, so he just shrugged it off as one of those things that sometimes happen with cars. After driving for a few miles, the car seemed fine. As he was getting ready to make a turn, his son said they were being followed. Ted looked in the rearview mirror and saw a large black SUV. After driving for a few more moments, his son began to panic. "Dad, I think they're following us," he told Ted. Upon another glance at the rearview mirror, sure enough, the SUV was still there. Ted then took a few more random turns through a neighborhood, went through some side streets, but the SUV was still there. Realizing something was very wrong, Ted pulled over into an empty parking lot. The black SUV followed, slowly drove up into the parking lot, parked, and just sat there. Ted and his son were freaking out. Ted quickly began reaching for his firearm near his seat, fearing that something bad was going to happen. His 19-year-old son was now ridden with anxiety. After what felt like an eternity, two men in suits exited the SUV and approached Ted's driver's side window. Ted described these men's odd and erratic behavior. They looked pretty ordinary, but he wondered if they were part of some mafia. They began asking Ted really strange questions and noted that he had been spending too much time at the lake. Ted, feeling threatened and annoyed with the relentless questions, demanded to know who they were. The men smirked and told Ted to have a nice day and that they'll be watching. Just like that, they got back in the SUV, pulled off onto the main road, and disappeared. Shortly after this, Ted began finding letters in his mailbox with no return address. The letters appeared strange and seemed to be written in some code. Much of it appeared gibberish, but there were sentences like, "We are watching you and you spend too much time around Blue Mountain Lake," and others like, "We were sent to monitor what you know." After receiving a handful of these letters over the following month, Ted reported it to the police. The police were not sure what to make of the letters, and after that, it seemingly stopped altogether. Ted has no idea, even to this day, what they were trying to hide at the Blue Mountain Fishing Lakes area. He wonders if there's a direct correlation between the unsettling feeling and strange odor that he and his son experienced on that day, and what would happen later on. Whoever these people were, they seemed to know that he had spent time here and were trying to drive him away from the area actively. This story is incredibly strange, and personally, I'm not sure what to make of it myself. It does sound reminiscent of a Men in Black story where an individual is accosted for information, but also different at the same time. If this was potentially a Men in Black situation, what is it that Ted and his son knew that was so threatening to these men? Most importantly, why did they experience the strange phenomena they did when they arrived at the lake that day? What was seen there that day that was so mysterious that these men wanted to hide so much? We have so many questions, but very few answers. There's an old abandoned house in the woods behind my childhood home. You know that a house is old when it is so forgotten that a tree grows up through the floor and out the ceiling. When we were young, we called it the treehouse. The paint was peeling and the roof had collapsed in a few of the bedrooms, but it was still the perfect hideout for a bunch of kids with nothing to do. It made the woods seem more interesting. We used to make up stories about the house and whoever might have lived there. They must have been cowboys, we said. That's how old it was. We said they were either cowboys or criminals, maybe both. Why else would the house be so isolated? We used to joke that they probably buried their guns or their bounties somewhere on the property. We even dug a few holes to make our fancies feel more tangible. All we ever found was bones. But they were not human. They were too small. We figured they were animal bones of some kind. Either way, they didn't hold our attention for long. Eventually, we were teenagers and we were using the house to drink or smoke. The paintings on the walls, which had always been too faded or rotten for us to truly see, became target practice for darts. The house had always been trashed. We weren't damaging it any further than time itself had. And the notches of the walls left by our games were nothing compared to the long scratches. From the beginning, we thought those scratches were peculiar. Four deep grooves running horizontally from room to room. It was like a wide fork had been plunged into the walls and dragged around the perimeter. We never imagined what actually could have made those markings. The day we learned the truth and saw it for ourselves was the day we left the treehouse for good. One night there was a knock at the door. We shoved our paraphernalia under the crooked couch we dragged in from down the road. All of us were present. That meant it wasn't any of us at the door. No one else even knew about the place, as far as we knew. That meant one thing, it was our parents. But when we finally got around to opening the door, already muttering our sorry excuses, there was no one outside. We grabbed some of our flashlights and searched outside all around the house, suspecting that someone was playing a game with us. We were all riled up and eager to prove ourselves, especially after thinking that we had been caught out there, which had scared us all silly. We were going to find the prankster and give them a reason not to mess with us again. But we didn't know what we were looking for, not really. We didn't know what we'd find. We didn't know that our fears were only just beginning. Then something like the sound of a shovel dragging across stone started to drift to our ears from inside the house. How had they gotten around us to get inside? We didn't know. We didn't care. We just wanted to find them and let them know this was our place. It seemed important at the time. We hadn't seen it yet. But when we got back inside, we did see it. It was an adult. We knew that much because it stood as tall as our father's. But it wasn't a man. And it wasn't a human. It had a bald, engorged head. Its eyes were bulbous and a little too far apart. Its mouth was wide and open, drooling and flashing rows of tiny needle-like teeth. Its skin was white and looked sticky. It looked like taffy that had melted in the sun. But worst of all was its hands. At the end of its arms were a set of hands that seemed to be stretched out, like each finger had been pulled out of socket. They were three times the length they should have been, and each digit ended in a sharp claw. Those claws were digging into the walls. They were carving a path, four rows from corner to corner. When we walked in, we interrupted. Those dark eyes jumped to us. It hissed and snarled. I'm not sure who it was, but one of us threw up. We cried, screamed, made an absolute mess of ourselves, and ran. We bolted out of that house, convinced that the creature was chasing us. One at a time, we risked a glance back. We were confident it was there, jumping between the tree branches or vaulting over the brush. Whether it really chased us or not, I don't know. The pursuit might have been a dream, something illustrated by the potency of our dread. It might have been a survival instinct, a way to convince ourselves to keep running, even after our lungs burned and our legs felt like jelly. But what we saw in the treehouse was most assuredly not a dream. It was real. It was flesh and bone and every type of wickedness. Those wide eyes, those teeth told us everything we needed to know. We were in its home. We had been trespassing for a long time. And if it caught us, we were doomed. They'd find us in pieces. Lucky for us, we were all faster than we looked. We tried to tell our parents. They scolded us for smelling of tobacco and alcohol. They feared that we'd tried something else out there, something that created the illusion of a monster. We were reasonably punished, grounded. Our chores were doubled, but I don't think any of us cared. We were saved, weren't we? They said we couldn't leave the house for months. In the end, the truth is that it was years before I ever wanted to leave the house again. When I was 15, my parents moved us from our Chicago suburb to a tiny town up in northern Minnesota. My father had lost his job when the factory shut down, and he had a cousin who offered him work up there. I was obviously less than thrilled to be changing schools partway through high school, but moving to a freezing northern town made it a million times worse. My parents insisted that it was a beautiful area and that with the lakes nearby, there was a ton of outdoor stuff we could do. We moved in June just after we finished the school year. As it turned out, the summer wasn't awful. It was surprisingly hot. My dad's cousin let us use his boat and we spent a lot of time out on the lake. Dad took us fishing a few times and we even started playing hockey just to fit in. Then in the fall, school started. The new school we went to was ridiculously small compared to my school back in Chicago. But I made some friends pretty quickly and I decided that I could survive these last 2 years before returning to Chicago for college. Then, winter hit. Winter in Chicago had been tough, so I thought I was prepared. Nope. This was absolute hell. The temperature was regularly in the single digits, if not below zero. Also, we were close enough to the lake that the wind chill dropped it another 20 degrees. I barely left my room most days, except for school or hockey practice. By February, I was going stir crazy. Then by spring, we started to get warm spells, and out of desperation, my brother and I begged my parents to take us somewhere, anywhere. They ended up suggesting we spend the weekend at a state forest about an hour away. Our parents had bought everyone kayaks for Christmas as a peace offering for having to move. The park had tons of lakes and rivers, so we were going to kayak and hike and camp overnight. We got to the park Saturday morning, no problem. We found a campsite set up and then lugged our kayaks to a launch point. We kayaked around the lake for hours, taking pictures of wildlife, fishing, and just hanging out. When we returned to the campsite, we walked around for a little while, then made a campfire and had dinner. Despite the abnormally warm day, it was still supposed to get cold overnight, so we had brought extra blankets and lots of them. The kayaking had taken a lot out of us, so we all fell asleep right away. In the middle of the night, I woke up needing to go to the bathroom. I ignored it for as long as I could, not wanting to get out of my sleeping bag, but eventually I had no choice. I wrestled my way out, trying not to wake my brother up, and threw on boots and my coat. The tents were in a clearing, but there was a small stand of trees maybe 20 yards away, so I headed there. I definitely wasn't going all the way to the campsite bathrooms. I didn't bring a flashlight because the moon was bright enough that I could basically see where I was going, and I wasn't going far anyway. I stepped a few feet into the trees and took care of business. Just as I was finishing up, I heard a sound. Definitely an animal sound. I wasn't scared, just curious. I was still getting used to seeing wildlife everywhere, and I had a running tally of the things I'd seen in the wild lately. I was hoping it was something cool, like an elk or moose, maybe even a wolf, although that probably would totally scare me. I stayed silent, waiting to see what it was. I heard a few more faint sounds, but couldn't see anything. I was freezing, so I decided to head back to the tent. Just then, I saw something moving between the tree branches. Based on how tall it was, I was sure it was definitely a moose or elk. I thought about trying to wake my family up quietly because I was sure they wouldn't believe me, but I was afraid it would be gone before we could all get back to see it. So I stood still and kept watching. After a minute, I saw a flash of something moving again and heard it getting closer to me. It came out from between a stand of thick evergreen trees. At first, I couldn't figure out what I was seeing. I saw the face first and immediately thought wolf, but the head was way too high. Besides, the face was just wrong. And then out came the rest of it, and I saw its body. It was walking on two legs. It was tall, at least 8 or 9 feet tall. The body wasn't completely human. The arms were too long and it was slightly hunched. The legs were muscular and all four limbs ended in claws. The whole body was completely covered in fur. It was dark brown, almost black. The creature stared right at me with glowing amber eyes that were far too intelligent. It opened its mouth and let out a weird half pant, half grunt, letting me see its razor sharp teeth. That was enough to send me running. I screamed the whole way back to our tents and head for my parents' tent. Of course, by the time they got up, the hideous creature was gone, and of course they didn't believe me. They insisted that I was either still asleep or had seen shadows playing tricks on me in the woods. But I knew. I knew what I saw. Back home, I searched online and eventually found exactly what I was looking for. Some pictures were different, but a few were almost identical to what I had seen that night. Online, I found other people who had seen the same thing I did, and they were all calling it a dogman. My family never believed me. But from that day on, I refused to ever go back to that park. I don't want to make a big deal about this. I don't know if it's going to get me in trouble or what, but I've heard a similar story making the rounds on social media lately. I thought sharing my own encounter might lend some credibility to what those people are saying. I wasn't visited by something. I wasn't attacked by something. I wasn't chased or threatened or agitated in any way. But I did see the people who did experience those things. I was a young EMT on my third night shift with a new hospital. I was still a pretty quiet person then, following the instructions of the people who'd been in the job longer than me. We were responding to a 911 call. Due to a traffic incident on the way there, we were the last to arrive on scene. Police and fire had already secured the location. As we approached the house, I thought I saw something rising over the rooftop. It looked like a drone taking flight from the backyard. It was bigger than a drone, but wasn't much bigger than a motorcycle. I saw it, it flickered, and it was gone. It only lasted a second, and in that moment, there were other things on my mind. The home was a one-story building in the suburbs. The 911 operator had received a call from a child who said something had broken into their backyard. The child said their parents were out there with it and they were screaming, fearing that an intruder had approached the home or that an animal had attacked the parents. The teams nearest to the area were dispatched. When we arrived, it seemed the incident was over. Fire directed us to the mother of the household, who had some pretty significant cuts on her arm. We asked if she was attacked. Between fits of tears and embarrassment, she said no, but she admitted that she'd caused it herself when she accidentally backed up through their glass patio door. There were scratches on her feet too. That was confusing enough. What had distracted her so badly that she didn't notice she was about to collide with her own door? We were starting to suspect that we'd walked into some kind of domestic incident. The father quickly dismissed that idea. He was being questioned by the police, but his answers were loud and frantic enough for all of us to hear. Fire stuck around just to keep listening. He said something crashed in their backyard. It shook the house and there was a flash of light, and he knew that something had struck his property. Thinking a tree had fallen into the yard, he rushed to investigate. but he said it was a vehicle. He said he saw a tear-shaped vessel jutting out of the earth. As he spoke, we snuck a peek at the back. Sure enough, there was a point of impact in the otherwise impeccable lawn. That was enough evidence to hold everyone's attention. Normally, claims like that would be dismissed as the ravings of the mentally ill or the intoxicated. This felt different. Besides, I had also seen something. I kept that detail to myself. He went on to say that as he approached the craft, he realized it was empty. One of the panels was missing, like it had fallen off during the descent. Inside was something shaped like a chair. He touched it. That's how I knew he was braver than me. He said he touched the side of the vehicle and that it felt more like glass than metal. Then he saw the pilot. He said it yelled at him. That's how it drew his attention. His eyes snapped from the vehicle to the edge of his property. Out there, according to the story, a man about 4 feet tall was approaching. That's when his wife started screaming. The man, meanwhile, couldn't move. As the mysterious figure drew closer, he said he noticed that he was wearing a suit, a strange combination of a pilot's helmet and pulsating organic material, maybe just an extension of the man's own body. His descriptions of the pilot didn't make much sense. He called him not a man, but sort of like a man. He detailed that pulsating material as a heart shaped like a hose, running from the pilot's mouth to his chest. Then the glass broke. That was enough to startle the husband out of his paralysis, I guess. He ran to check on his wife, and soon enough the flashing lights were closing in around his home. He said they watched the pilot climb into his craft. The missing panel simply materialized above him, still reminiscent of glass. And then the fire department was at his door. By the time he gathered his wits and let them in, guiding them to the backyard, police and paramedics were also arriving. We were arriving, and at the same time, the craft vanished. I knew better than that. I knew that the craft hadn't simply disappeared. It had taken off. I knew I could validate the guy's story then and there. I chose not to. I don't know if I was just too stunned or if I was too scared, but I didn't chime in. I let the rest of the emergency responders shake their heads and dismiss the guy's story. Even with a hole in his backyard, they weren't convinced that something otherworldly had happened. I wasn't ready to admit it either, and I'd seen the tear-shaped craft just like the father had. In the end, we all let this be one of our weird stories. We buried it. No one ever said anything. No one asked any questions, even after that family fled the city in fear. But now similar stories are coming out, aren't they? Now I'm not the first one to stand up. It's easier with a group, I guess. These strange occurrences, the encounters you can't quite believe, I've seen them and they're absolutely real. I was really fascinated with mythical creatures when I was a kid. It was probably because my aunt would let me stay up late with her and watch creature features on TV. It gave me bad dreams, but I still loved it. I hadn't thought about that stuff in a long time as an adult. But a few months ago, I was between jobs and I took this position as a security guard. All I really have to do is be physically present on the property for a certain number of hours and keep an eye out for intruders and respond to any alarms. It's a low-key job. But there's a building across the street from where I work that always gave me the weirdest feeling. It's completely unmarked. And at the time, I hadn't really been able to find any solid information on it. And one night, something happened that just sent my mind reeling right back to the creature features days. I was just doing my rounds when I saw something detach itself from the shadows near that strange building. It wasn't really my job to look into any strange things happening, but I was curious. The night felt different, a bit spooky, and with all the rumors of weird stuff happening, I felt like a detective. I pointed the flashlight towards where the rustling sound was coming from. Suddenly, next to the building, a tall, towering figure fully stepped into the light. It was like something straight out of a scary movie. My heart began to race, and my eyes must have been as wide as saucers. I was looking at a creature that was taller than a basketball player. Its face was long, like a wolf's or a dog's. The creature's body was huge and strong, like a bodybuilder's, but covered in dark, thick hair. Its eyes were the strangest part. They were almost glowing, a beautiful amber color that seemed to pierce the darkness. The way it looked at me was chilling. It wasn't like a wild animal stare. It had a human-like intelligence in its eyes. It didn't feel like I was looking at just another creature. It felt like I was looking at something that was thinking and understanding, just like a human. As I tried to make sense of this creature, I began to notice other details. Its chest heaved with each breath, muscles rippling beneath its thick coat. The hair, although coarse and wild, seemed meticulously cared for. The distinct musky scent of wet fur mixed with earth filled the air, overwhelming my senses. The creature's paws were another bizarre sight. They looked almost like hands, human-like but with elongated fingers ending in sharp claws that glinted ominously in the faint light. I could see the power hidden in those claws, the potential to wreak havoc, yet they hung harmlessly by its side. Then there was a shift in its stance, a tiny lowering of its head and a narrowing of its eyes. Fear gripped me then more than before because it was a look I had seen many times. But in humans, it was a look of contemplation of making decisions. The realization that this was no mere animal sent a fresh wave of terror over me. Yet it did nothing. It merely watched me, its amber eyes now less threatening and more curious. It tilted its head slightly, almost as if it was studying me. The moment was surreal, like time had frozen, with me and this creature under a spotlight created by my trembling flashlight. I was terrified, but I still couldn't stop watching it. It felt like I was standing there forever, but within minutes, it suddenly propelled itself into a run that was incredibly fast and effortless for how big it was. It went around the corner of the building and disappeared. I was left standing there, realizing I had witnessed something that shattered the boundaries of everything I had believed to be true. Since the night of that encounter, I have been obsessed with finding out anything I can about these creatures. I have this insatiable need to know what kind of cabal is invested in concealing information about them. I don't think it's right that this information should be suppressed. If you examine the features of dogmen, it seems clear that they can't just be the result of natural evolution. Their unique characteristics set them apart from any other known species. With a canine-looking head, oddly shaped rear legs, and an upper body that looks like a primate, they defy classification. No animal has such a bizarre combination of traits. It's like a wolf or dog has been spliced together with a man-like primate. Some people think that dogmen could have come from ancient matings between wolves and apes, but that seems inconceivable to me. The genetic differences between those two families are too huge. The only explanation that makes sense to me is that dogmen are the product of genetic engineering. But stories of dogmen go back to the 18th century in North America, and they go even farther back in some other cultures. And as far as we've been told, genetic engineering is a pretty recent achievement. I wouldn't even be asking these questions if I hadn't seen that creature with my own eyes. There are just too many impossibilities. I think if dogmen exist, then an extraterrestrial intelligence must have been involved in their creation. Their existence seems to point to beings more advanced than humans, experimenting with life on Earth. It really makes me wonder what other biological projects they might have going on. In the UFO community, there's a pretty widespread belief that there's a hidden military and scientific establishment within the United States. And the speculation is that they are controlling all evidence related to extraterrestrial intelligence. So these things are probably vastly underreported. That's why people who talk about it are still considered crazy. A cabal that controls the military can hunt down any cryptids that venture too close to human civilization. But I think things might finally be starting to shift. There are too many of us who are privately investigating now. And I've even joined a group that's formally organized to investigate any leads we get. I'm still working at the same place, and there are more and more things adding up that indicate something is going on in that building. I don't know if that dogman escaped from there or what. The fact that my job is so low-key gives me a chance to spend a decent amount of time observing things going on over there. It's weird watching people go in and out of that building. It's usually really early in the morning or right around dusk. I can't really go into much detail right now. That's why I haven't mentioned the location, but if the time comes when there is more clarity, I definitely want to keep you in the loop. I think your channel is providing a real service for people to find each other and start cataloging a lot of information that just used to seem so random. Seeing that dog man really woke me up and reminded me that there are a lot of forces at play that need to be brought out of the darkness.